All right. Oh, welcome back for part two of our two-part episode. I'm always excited when we could kind of come back here and dive a little bit deeper, and my guest gets to ask me even more questions here. So for those who missed last week, please go to rosskrause.com, rosskrause.com, to listen to part one of our episode. It'll be about 25 minutes, and then you'll be up to date. But without further ado, let's get into part two of our two-part episode today. I'm very excited for what we have to go over.
Can you give the audience some advice, baseline advice? So I just looked at the U.S. median income, and that is at 60-something thousand, 64,000 as of 2018.
Okay.
For somebody making that amount, what would be the ideal amount to be investing in?
So that's a great question, and I'm going to use a percentage because I can't use dollars, because if you're making $64,000 in a rural place in a state that has lower expenses, then that's you're doing actually great, and you could save a lot. If you're making $64,000 and living in Manhattan, you're screwed, right? You're not saving any of that. So I'm going to use a percentage, and I like to draw a little pie chart, okay? So the first pie is, well, what's going to go toward rent and mortgage, buying or renting, either one. You want no more than 28% to go to that. Then 28% to go toward just a rent or mortgage and stuff like that. Let's say we throw in just debts. You have student loan debts. You have a car payment debt. You have other debts you have to pay in life for whatever they are. Then you bump that up to 36% of your debts. Okay, so of your income. So you wouldn't want to spend more than that on really debt. Okay, and the reason why is, well, then you have food, you have necessities, you have utilities that end up encompassing, let's say you've eaten up 30% of that already. They end up eating up about 40 to 50% of the others, which is, by that I just meant 40 to 50% of money that you're spending, you can't save that, right? Based on food, eating out, friends, clothes, emergencies, just stuff that happens in life. You can't save that. But that should leave almost everyone with about 25% left over, right?
To go into savings.
Right. So if you've looked at your own expenses and you don't have that 25% left over, you're spending too much on rent, on your debt, on food, on some other expenses. And you have to go through that budget and find somewhere where you could cut it out. Like maybe you're spending $5 a day in Starbucks and coffee, and that's why you can't save money, right? And that's a topic for another time. So that 25% should go towards something that's growing or protecting you. Some of that has to go towards health insurance. You have to have health insurance, auto insurance, homeowners insurance, rentals insurance. Sometimes it's disability, sometimes it's life, depending on your situation. About 10% goes to that. Once again, depending on your age and all that stuff. So most of the time you're left with 15 or 20% left, and that money should be saved. And it's very important to save at least 10 of that, but 20% to be more aggressive. The question is, well, where is that going? I want to put some of my 401k because maybe my company matches it and I get a tax benefit. Some of it has to go to the bank because I need money in the bank. It has to be in my checking or savings account. I have to have some money in there. And then if there's any leftover money, it can go towards a personal investment account or something that has a goal that's close to you. And that's why it's very important that you don't necessarily have to get everything down to a science, but you need to generally know what you're spending a month that's fixed, that you can't do anything without, that you have to spend the mortgage and the car payment and this and that, and that all have to get spent. And then what you have left over, what's that percentage? So it's usually a percentage of what you're doing. And it's a good thing to look at every year as life gets more expensive, as life changes, as you get a raise, as whatever happens. So hopefully that answered that question for the most part.
That's a segue I wanted to.
Yeah.
This is not information you and I learned growing up.
No, you don't learn this in school, unfortunately. That's the point of this podcast. Yeah.
I mean, my dad was very frugal with his money. Mm-hmm. But he never once sat me down and gave me learning. Now, if you had to introduce a curriculum, what would be the most essential thing that every student would need to know leaving?
Is that question four? Or is that question
three?
That's four. Okay. And that's a really good question. So I didn't learn this too. Most of the people in my industry didn't learn this. And one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast is I want people to learn it. And I want you to learn it at as young age as possible. Because making these real life mistakes actually has real life consequences. Because if you don't realize that you need to be saving for retirement until you're 45 years old, it could be too late, it could be too hard, and it changes your life. So I want people to have the knowledge when they're in their teens and 20s. Whether or not they do it isn't necessarily the point, but I want them to know about it as well. Sorry, could you repeat that question again?
So if you had to create a curriculum.
Oh, curriculum, okay.
What would be the most important point that every 18-year-old needs to know?
It's creating a budget and creating a saving strategy, and that's part of what my monthly fee works for people is on that, is you need to know, it doesn't have to be, let's comb through your credit card statement and find every statement, every expense. You don't have to be that exact, but you need to know, do you have any debts, student loans, car payments, right? What those debts are, how much are you paying in mortgage? How much are you making? Where those percentages fit in? Then is also, are you married? Are you single? Do you have kids? Do you have to have money go towards them? Do you have parents you're supporting based on your age and health, right? All of that stuff. Do you have health issues and stuff that you need to spend? Are you a fitness nut and you have all these hobbies, right? So where do your hobbies fit in? Because the important part of this is I don't want you to save 20% if it means you can't do the things you want to do now. That's also not part of this. So you have to carve out those percentages of the things that, Ross, I got to go to the gym. I got my personal trainer. It's expensive. It's $200 or $300 a month, whatever it is. But that's part of my life, and I don't want to sacrifice that. So these are all conversations, and you need to have priorities set. So you have to budget, and you have to have your goals and what's important to you, and you have to fit that in. And then from there, then you should figure out what's left over after all of that, if there's any wiggle room, and make sure you have a plan of where that excess money is going. Whether it's $25 a month or whether it's $1,000 a month, you have to have a plan. Putting it all in the bank is a bad plan. I'm telling you, it's a bad plan. Putting it all in investments is also a bad plan too. I'm telling you that it has to be, and that's part of my job is to invest your money, but in the right buckets, in the right places for the now, for the later, for the middle, for the different time horizons, for different stuff. So you have to have that set up and figured out. And that would be my curriculum, is to teach people how to do that. You don't have to know everything, but everyone's situation is different. So you can't just go on the internet and say, what should I be saving? It doesn't work because the internet doesn't know what's important to you. Only you do. So you need to do that. And if you're married or have a significant other, while you don't have to have the same goals, you should still communicate about what those are so you're on the same page. So it's very important to not avoid it. I know that's easy. And if you do want to avoid it, that's a better reason to just pay me the money and I can do that for you very quickly as well. But don't avoid it because it's going to have huge detriments to your future when you realize, oh crap, I should have done that 20 years ago and now I got to catch up. And that's unfortunate because then you have to sacrifice stuff. And I don't want you to have to sacrifice anything of your life to get what you want. And when you're young, in your 20s and 30s, you usually don't have to sacrifice too much to save what you need. But I do work with people who are 50s and 60s, and it's very difficult, almost impossible, to get their goals set at that age if you're behind. So I would say start early, educate yourself, get the knowledge set, and make sure you have a good plan. And just, once again, you don't have to do this every day, but once a year is good to just refresh and look at it. Make it a New Year's goal, okay? Now is the perfect time. Hit the New Year's, find your budget or savings goal, and let's get it started.
What about for people who don't even have that wiggle room to save?
Right.
Paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
$30,000 a year.
So let's say you're paycheck to paycheck, right? Because there's only three things you can do, right? If you said, I want to retire at this age with this amount of money, there's three ways we can do that, right? We could grow your money over time and take risk in the market. You could save more toward that goal. But if you can't save more toward that goal, the money has to come from somewhere. So your options are get another job and find a way to earn more money, or find what you're currently spending and cut something out. Those are tough decisions, and I can't make that for people. But I tell you, if you're in your situation, a lot of people are, the only way you can do it is find a way to make extra money or find a way to reduce your expenses. There's no get-rich-quick scheme. There's no, you know, there's no magical solution. It's tough. It sucks. It's hard work, and it's not fun. That's the reality of it. Move in with your parents, right? Find roommates. Find a way to save the $500 a month. But that's it. You got to do it. You got to make a sacrifice somewhere. It's either working longer, working for, you know, Uber, finding a job that's going to earn you money, bringing more money in, or spending less, or altering your goals. Those are the three things.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are the only things you can do. And most of the time when I work with people, they don't want to work longer and harder because people are working long and hard. It's not like they're not working hard. So finding another way for income is not realistic. Cutting expenses is one of the hardest things for people to do because it's adjusting their lifestyle. And it's very difficult to adjust your lifestyle. Now, I could always go in and find a few things to do. So changing a goals is one of the things. It might be living less lavishly. It might be retiring later. It might be putting off a vacation for an extra few years, or it might be investing much more aggressively than you want, knowing that you need to get a higher rate of return on your investments.
Or you can throw away your kids.
Or you could go to the black market and sell a kidney. Right? These are all things. But I mean, that's really how it works. For the reality of most people, well, it'd be awesome to go play the Powerball lottery and win $500 million. That's not a good plan.
I had a long talk with my staff about that. So the Illinois Powerball is up to
like, it's up to like $500 million or $1 billion.
So they're all buying it. I'm like, dude, don't. Like, you're dropping, what, $10 per ticket?
If you did it once a year and bought a $10 ticket, I say go for it. That's
once
fun.
A year.
Right? But if you're doing it every week, that's probably an expense where I should say maybe that money could go somewhere else. So almost everyone, especially younger, has a way that they could reduce their expenses. I just tell you that. If we go through, and I work with younger people, and we go through a lot of stuff, and we put money away, and they find that if the money is going to a separate savings account instead of their bank account, then they just don't spend it. And sometimes money being there, they just spent. And some people have that issue. So I set up this account just so they can't get to it. And literally, I work with a few girls in their 20s, like, Ross, if the money's in my account, I'm going to spend it on Uber. And this was before COVID. Uber and Lyft and going out and hanging out with my friends. So if you take the $200 a month and put it in the investments, I'm not going to miss it. I just won't go out as much. And that's fine. But I need you to do it for me because I can't do it myself.
Well, so I just started the a separate checking account with American Express because they have limited on how often I could withdraw.
Oh, interesting.
So interesting. It just forces me to just put it in there and walk away from it.
Yeah.
And it's got a pretty decent return too. So
yeah.
I'll do that. That's just pure cash.
Yeah.
That's all I'm in.
Yeah. That's exactly what my philosophy would be for people. And I think a lot of times you just need, sometimes like me, I'm not only not an investment manager, but I'm almost like a life coach who holds you accountable for your plan because it's like that for people who try to get healthy or lose weight. It's the same thing. Well, you just need someone to help you.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. Change. Yeah. Really yeah. Hard. It's hard to do it on your own. And most millions of people struggle with these things. With whatever it is, because either they feel alone or they just need a little bit of help. It's not a huge change, but yeah, that's how I would recommend doing it. But there's no magical solution. I mean, work harder or get another job to make money. find a way to spend less or change your goals. That's it, right? Barring winning the lottery or having some rich uncle in, you know, France die and you inherit money, this is what you're looking at. So be realistic, and it's hard work. I tell people this is hard. This is not easy to do this.
Yeah.
It's disciplined. Yeah. It takes a long time. And so don't expect immediate results. So that's my answer to that.
That was a solid. To all the audience listening, you guys, listen to this guy.
Thanks. Thanks for the plug.
This dude is legit.
I appreciate that.
Barbecue after.
I would love.
I would love to. Let you pick the last one because I have two questions.
Okay.
First is, have you heard about Reddit Wall Street Bets?
No. So let's do a different one.
Oh, then we'll move on. Okay.
Yeah.
You should look into it.
Okay, I will.
It's just a bunch of crazy people.
Okay.
The last one is, okay, as I'm growing up too, I'm noticing that the difficulties in entering as like a small business owner, it's becoming more and more restrictive just because of the cost. Now, how is that affecting you, and what do you think? It just feels like just another, you know, house built on sand. It's so restricting. So I only got this because I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about the company Little Debbie's little pastry cakes, you know.
Oh, okay.
Hostess's biggest rival. Dude, it was a family from like 1920. They sold their car, bought a bakery.
Right.
That's how they started. You can't sell a car to buy a bakery today.
No.
The investing partners for my shop, it was $200,000.
Yeah.
That was simply to renovate an already built out restaurant. Nobody has $200,000.
No.
So where do you see this going as a long term? You know, this is just another bubble. It's just more restrictive barriers to the lower class.
Yes.
Upward mobility.
I think it is. It's a travesty, to be honest. It's really sad because a lot changed after 2008 with the financial crisis and the banks being very tight of who they lend money to. And unfortunately, that hurts exactly what you're saying, the mom, pa, the small businesses that need those loans from a banks to start out. So until banks change that, which may or may not happen, I get it, they need to be diligent and they can't just hand out money to everyone, but they should loosen their purse strings a little bit on that.
Right.
Now, what we've seen more and more is there's a lot of venture capitalists, rich, wealthy people who are looking to invest in these things. The problem is a lot of them are concentrated in certain areas. A lot of them are concentrated in certain industries. So what I think would be a great thing to do, and I don't have control over this, but what I'm hoping what we get to in the future is that local governments have to partner with people. Yes, the governments, the municipalities, the city of wherever you are, needs to work with the small businesses for tax breaks, economical, offer stuff, work with the banks, the local banks as well, where everything has to be in unison to get in the right businesses. Because while it's great to have all these tech companies around, people also need restaurants to go to. People need things to do for the economy.
Right.
And so all these small little towns, and I learned this because I was on the Chamber of Commerce in Wilmette, in Evanston. I was in the Rotary Club of Wilmette and Chamber of Commerce in Evanston, and I went to a meeting, and the mayor was there, and he was speaking about how, while we want to bring in all the financial planners and the lawyers and the law firms and the doctor offices, we're picky of who we bring in because we want our downtown area to be filled with places that people are going to go. So we want retail shops, we want restaurants, right? We want to bring the people in and go because we know that's better for the community. So they were picking and choosing who they let in. So along those lines, it is good. And it's why downtown Wilmette got so revitalized and why other downtown areas in the North Shore weren't doing as well. Because once again, doctor offices are great, but it doesn't revitalize a community. You need places that people could feel, and food and stores and places you go to buy things is a little bit. It's a little bit better. Now, you have to take that further. The next step is you have to encourage the Andrew O's, the small business guys who have an idea, to find a way for them to partner with people with money, with banks, to make it all work symbiotically so you could bring those in. Because right now, if you wanted to start a business and you might have a great business idea and something, they're not going to give you, I mean, it's so, so difficult to start.
Right.
And that creates a huge barrier of entry, which allows the big guys to continue and the small guys to get squashed like cockroaches, which is good for some, but I think there's a way for everyone to win. I don't necessarily think it's great for small towns and small communities. I think they need small businesses, and I think they need access to capital. But the local governments have to do that. It has to be a mission. They have to do it, and they have to be proactive about it. Otherwise, you can't just say, Andrew, go do it on your own. You need their help. You need the city of Evanston to help you and support you and find a way for it to happen. Yeah.
The asymmetrical effect of the quarantine on businesses. I mean, so I'm sure you know this, but the amount of small businesses that have just been shuttered and demolished in the last 10 months. I mean, you know, just in downtown Evanston right now, besides like the big names like Jimmy John's, Chipotle, they're doing fine because they're a national brand.
Mm-hmm.
But small businesses, if you come through today, man, it's gone.
The restaurants,
like, almost.
It's sad.
I know, but not even. But not just the food industry, but you know, small retail shops.
Yes.
Just, you can't survive it.
And I think that's
people are just jumping on Amazon.
Right, and it's bad for it. It might be okay for a customer if they want to buy something cheap and convenient. I get it, but overall for the community, I think it's bad. I think there's going to be some negative long-term side effects if we don't find a way to revitalize small business. And like I said, the town has to help. The municipalities have to help. And a lot of it has to do with the rent too. Because unlike like my business, I don't have to have a put down rent to rent a spot. Yeah. I could do everything remotely.
Yes.
But your business and retail, there's a lot of businesses that have to have an actual space to do it, and rents are out of control. And
the inflation on
property, that's part of an issue. So what you need to do is you need to help people, you need to subsidize it, and you have to do some type of tax breaks at multiple levels to incentivize people to do it. Once again, I'm not going to be able to get you the specifics. I don't think, you know, I think it requires a whole team effort. I think it really requires a lot of people working together to do it, but there's answers to this. And I think the way youth and younger people are going, I think people are starting to realize this, and I'm hoping there's more push in the future for politics to get more involved with helping small businesses out and doing it, because it is good for the community. You know, Evanston is good when there's all these locally owned, local areas, shops there that, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Mr. and Mrs. whoever Doe are working there.
Yeah.
And it's nice. And as long as it's not price gouging, as long as they're charging you a fair price and you're getting a quality product for it, I think it's good. And right now, I would not recommend anyone to open up a restaurant or a retail shop right now. It's a bad investment, and there's no this. It's just too hard. It's just too hard, right?
But you know, you and I talked about this last week. I mean, fortunately though, for me and my partners, it's, you know, we are going to have the pick of the crop to have all these empty storefronts.
Yeah, that's true.
Again, at the end of the day, though, you know, it comes off the skeletons of what was once Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfortunate. To end this on a really light note, I think you're right. I think our generation and the incoming generations are very conscious of the class disparity and the wealth disparity. And I'm hoping for great things. I'm hoping, you know, we return to the roaring 20s? No, that ended in the Great Depression. So we don't want to do that.
The 20s were good until 1929 and the stock market crashed. Yeah.
Until the banks
There needs to be a balance between that and also there still has to be the right regulation, right? Because all this stuff still has to be regulated. We can't just have crazy markets and then people doing all this stuff and, you know, hiding assets and stuff. So the balance. I think we've gotten away from the balance of capitalism and socialism, and by socialism I mean just like, well, we should
just regulate it.
Yeah, there needs to be a little bit better balance, and right now it feels like it's more of a runaway for the top 1% of the 1% to make all the money and not trickle down enough to everyone else. And small businesses continually getting crushed or bought out.
Right.
By a lot of times people say, I want to start a business so I could sell it to Amazon or I could sell it to the top guys. Right. And I'm like, well, that's also not great too. I mean, we need competition. We need there to be more than just one internet and phone company. We need there are, and now there feels like there's like three different airlines and that's it. We need more of that. We need more variety, more competition because it helps breed innovation and that's good. And small businesses help push the larger guys. And if there's not enough of that, the larger guys are just going to sit and be like, here's our money, right? And that's, I think a lot of times businesses in those cycles end up working itself out because I think overall they are efficient. But we do need to make sure we're not going too extreme. Yeah.
If we could ever introduce new antitrust laws that would prevent these giant conglomerates from merging. To the young listeners, there used to be 40 different airlines in the U.S.
You
would not believe it.
I know. All these, you know, Delta's owned by someone, right? There's no more Northwest. I mean, all of these are – I know there's United and American, and then there's like JetBlue and Southwest, and those are really the four I could think of besides a few low-budget ones. But there's really – yeah, I mean, it's like that. Same with hotels. There's lots of different hotels, but they all seem to be owned by Hilton or – the Marriott, right?
And there used to be different phone providers.
There
used to be local municipal utilities that competed with them, and it's all gone.
I would encourage that, and I'll leave it on this, is that a lot of the solutions to this is that people like you and young people need to get more involved in politics and more involved in the local side of things and figure out who's running, what their stances are, how it works for the economics. And if they're not happy, run themselves, especially on a local level. If you think you want to revitalize an area and you want to start a business, unfortunately, becoming involved in politics might be the best way to do that. And I encourage people to do that on a small level because that's really how you see this change. And know all this because all these, I think like a lot of this stuff gets glossed over bigger and let's be honest, more important issues right now, but it doesn't mean these other things aren't important too. And I think they get a little overlooked when everything's as crazy as they are now, but people get involved. If you're passionate and you want to do this stuff, look up what your local, what your local government's doing, where you live. And if you're not happy with that, try to find a way to change it because that's a lot easier than changing it at a national level. That's very hard. Changing it if you live in a small town and you want to start a business, talk to the people on city council and find a way to make it happen.
Chamber of Commerce. And I recommend that.
Those are important things.
Find your local community center, be a part of their associate boards or Chamber of Commerce. Just get your voice heard.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Who's your local rep? You're in Chicago. Who's your alderman? Because I bet you that person.
I don't know. See, I'm not involved in that stuff on my end, and I should be because it all does connect. It all connects politics and government and small business and the banks, and it all connects. And it would be nice if it worked a little bit better together so things could work smoothly. I'm going to leave it at that. Thanks. Those were some great thought-provoking. I'm glad you had some good questions. I think this was an interesting conversation. Andrew, I appreciate your time very much.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Thanks for joining me. Thanks for joining the Money Seat. Thanks, listeners. I hope you found this useful and maybe brought some people to take action. If anything, you heard this and you're like, I'm gonna try to make some changes in my life and get involved and make a budget, then we accomplished our goal. So once again, thanks for joining me on the Money Seat. Thanks again for my host, Andrew. And I'll talk to you next time. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results.
All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.